Welcome, everybody, to another edition of The Last Christian. My name is J.D. Williams, and joining me from New York City, my co-host, my brother in Christ, Mr. David Paxton. And David, this is a completely new and different broadcast. We've never tried this before. And for those of you that you're joining us for the first time, this is really verse by verse. And we're going to start in Genesis chapter 1. And the reason we're doing this is because we realize that there's a lot of people out there who have never heard the Word of God. I mean, really heard the Word of God. I mean, we had in our last show, David brought up a point about things that aren't in the Bible. And now you're going to know what really is there. And if you've got a Bible, we encourage you to pick it up, read along with us. What I have is in the New King James Version. If you got another version, that's okay. But just read along with us. Anyway, David, you got anything to say before we get going here?
Yeah, when we consider it the Bible, we got to remember it wasn't written in English.
Right.
Okay, and that's really, really important when you're doing a Bible study. There's always a surface level, but even the the ancient Jews believe there was 10 different levels, you know, one of them being the surface and then a whole bunch of other levels of meaning in between. But we're going to explore at least a couple of those levels as we go through this, and we're going to look into the original language. And I don't mean to burst your bubble or anything, but I am not beholden to any English translation because it is a translation. It is flawed in one way or another. So don't go tell me only this version or that version.
I want you to point out anything at all. You know, if mm-hmm. again, this, it just happens to be my favorite version. Now, mm-hmm. honestly,
yeah, it's actually a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly speaking, if I'm actually going into deep Bible study, I pull out the King James Version itself. And I do a lot of I mean, if you were to look in my Bible, you'd see a lot of highlighting. I do. Mm. But as far as just reading it, going through it on a daily basis, I prefer the New King James Version. There, mm-hmm. I think there's only maybe one or two versions out there that I don't particularly care for. But, I mean, you know, again.
And they're weak.
Yeah. If you've got a Bible, please read along with us. If you don't, we encourage you to get one. You know.
Yeah, get it out. And we'll look around. We'll see which versions actually portray the best of the original, or at least the point we're trying to get across. Right. But just to be real clear, some of the major differences are what's called the Textus Receptus, or the received text. So there was a set of texts that actually made it all through history. And then Westcott and Horton and a couple other people, like in the 1800s, they said, oh, well, we found these earlier books and they didn't have this version and this verse and that verse in it. So what they did, they started taking some of the verses out, not realizing that the reason they were earlier versions is most likely because they were thrown out and the full versions were text forward. And what gives me that, and I'm not 100% dogmatic because I wasn't there, but that's what it looks like to me. But the ones who, Westcott and Hort, were basically agnostics, and they didn't want the deity of Christ in there, so they tried to do whatever they can by pretending to be Greek scholars.
Right.
So I do like the King James in the fact that it's based on the Textus Receptus, but so is Tyndale's. It's just really hard to read. So if you can just add some of those verses back in with some of your other versions that you like to read along, that's pretty good too. But I would really admonish you people. Nowadays, it's so easy. You can just go get the Blue Letter Bible on your phone, and you can look up the Greek and the Hebrew, and it'll even parse it out. It'll tell you what tense it is. It'll tell you everything. Right. So it's real easy today. When I started this, remember that the Strong's Concordance was like this thick?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you had to look. And you're going through it. Okay, where's that?
I still look at a lot of that stuff, but, you know, I go to Bible Gateway. And by the way, for you people out there, if you don't have the money, Some of you, I realize you just don't have it. You know, you just don't have the money to do it.
Yeah, Blue Letter Bible's free.
Yeah, you can go to Bible Gateway and look at, they got so many versions of the Bible on there, it's unbelievable. You know, but anyway, yeah. You know, just go there
look and start at
Genesis 1:1, you know.
And, yeah.
Anyway.
So I had the interlinear in paperback.
Oh, wow.
Can you imagine? I was like on top of the world.
Yeah, I still go to those concordances every now and then and read it, especially, you know, something I don't really understand. And you'll be surprised how many times, you know, you got this guy says this, and oh, well, yeah, that kind of makes sense. And you go to this one, and it's different, you know, but it says, okay, well, that kind of makes sense too. And that leaves you to going and searching and digging and, you know, and then last resort, which should be first resort, take it to prayer and get the real answer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then that's.
Yeah. And just look around. And yeah. If you, he'll tell you, trust
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right.
All right. Well, let's get right into it.
Genesis.
Genesis 1.
Bereshit.
This is Genesis 1, verses 1 through, and we might make it to 5. I don't know. David, go ahead.
All right. So in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. Then God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. So the evening and the morning were the first day.
That's a lot of work in one day, you know, when you really think about
it. It is. And he's just like, yeah, I just did that.
Yeah. I mean, and all he had to do was speak. Let there be light.
Yep.
And there was light. Yeah, I mean, that's just amazing,
well,
you know.
That's what I wanted to talk about. At first, because of the Hebrew construct of this, it really says something a little bit different. Now, when you're just trying to translate it from the Hebrew, I can understand how they would bring this into bear, especially being that basically it's biased from previous translations. But I want to read to you the Young's literal translation here, and then I want to give you my take on it, if
okay.
I could.
Okay, yeah.
Now, just everybody close your eyes and listen to the first three verses here.
Okay.
In the beginning of God's preparing the heavens and the earth had existed waste and void, and darkness is on the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God fluttering on the face of the waters, and God said, let there be light, and light is.
Wow. That I have never heard that before. Tell me again, where is that from again?
It's Young's literal translation. Okay. Now, if I were to put that in, and I was trying to explain this to my kid, all right, and we'll back into this several times. We're going to have to go over this a few or four times at least,
okay.
All right? Verses 1 through 3 are actually one sentence.
Okay, I'm going to put this back up here again where people can kind of follow along with what you're talking about.
It's,
go ahead.
It's actually one sentence.
Okay.
Okay, and so Young's literal has it as one sentence, and it's really good, but it's literal. So I want to try and make an English as literal as I can, too. So is the way I would put this is, while beginning to prepare the heavens and the earth was existing, and it was formless and void, and that darkness was on the face of the deep, but the Spirit of God was fluttering on the face of the waters. This was all put into motion when God said, let there be light.
Okay. Now, again, I have never heard that, but it fits perfectly. Mm-hmm. Just reading the verses here. And by the way, just for everybody listening, David said that's one sentence. And yeah, he's right. What I did in this was myself, I'm the one that separated these out, you know, so you're going to see that with the slides that we have for Genesis. Maybe I should change that.
Well, even in the translation, they put periods in it, and then they put in verse 3, what you have is, then God said. That's not what it said. It's basically saying God used light to create the heavens and the earth.
Right. Okay. Okay.
All right. And there's a reason for that, because we in the quantum world, everything is based on the speed of light. Time is based on the speed of light,
right,
which we see, you know, Einstein's theory of relativity. He even used that, you know, if you're traveling at the speed of light, time stops. Time is measured by the speed of light. It's a construct. Light is also what makes up matter. Light makes up mass. It makes up the dimensions from here to here. How far is that? Oh, that's one light year. Mm-hmm. Everything, the construct of our time-space continuum is light. Why is that? Because in the beginning was the Word, the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and he was the light of the world.
Right, right.
He is the light of the world.
I'm going
to use that as a construct.
I'm going to jump in here for all of those people out there that says, oh, well, God couldn't have created us. Okay, because, you know, you've heard it, I've heard it, you know, that there was a Big Bang. Okay, and my argument has always been, well, what blew up exactly?
Nothing. Nothing blew up and became everything.
Nothing blew up, nothing, and everything happened after that. If you believe that, David, there's a bridge there in New York called the Brooklyn Bridge, right? Well, I can sign that over to anybody who wants to buy it.
I sold it.
Oh, did you already? Well, shoot.
Yeah, I sold it last week.
Yeah. Now, I don't remember his name. You will, I'm sure. But there was a scientist. Well, I mean, he was supposed to be the smartest guy on earth right now or something. He was completely paralyzed. He would speak.
Talking.
You know, he'd speak. And he did not believe in God. He believed that, as far as I know, he never accepted Jesus Christ. And so I pity him.
Well, he believes in him now.
Yeah, he sure does. But, you know, he said he tried so many different theories of how the world was to be created, and none of them flew. You know, I mean, it never came across. So he finally, his last one was, it exists because it has to.
It's just because it has to.
that was it. Okay. I mean, now that, you know, so if you believe that stuff, then you'll be seeing him again. You'll be seeing that guy again soon.
Well, that takes more faith to believe that than somebody who's really smart made it. And he's a lot smarter than you.
Yeah,
that's a lot easier for me to believe. It doesn't take a lot of faith for me to believe there's somebody smarter than me that designed all this, because I see design everywhere. Just look at nature. Tell me a platypus wasn't designed. Go ahead.
Well, you know, and I agree with that. Like I said, I'd call myself a Christian for at least 3 decades, if not longer, and I wasn't. I had never really accepted Jesus Christ, and we were in Galveston, Texas. And just to go back a little bit, some of y'all have heard this story before, so bear with me. But I was on vacation. I don't swim. I can't swim. If you give me enough time, I can float. Okay, that's it. That's all I can do. And so we spent several days in Galveston. And I was floating out there in Galveston Bay, real nice warm water, and looking around at all the seagulls flying around and all the beauty. And I was like, I can't believe people don't believe in God. And they see this. Okay.
It's Romans. So, Romans says, hey, it's written in nature.
So
yeah, everybody knows.
Every now and then I'd touch my foot to the bottom, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And again, just a little backstory here. If I can't touch bottom or water gets too high, I freak out, get to flailing away like an idiot, and I sink. Okay, well, if you do that in a swimming pool, you know, you can fight your way over and pull yourself out. But I was in the Gulf of Mexico. Okay, we're talking the Atlantic Ocean here. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And I'd reach down and I couldn't touch bottom, and I started. I could feel my hands going up. I could feel the breath, everything. It was just like always, like it had happened every time before. But this time, there was a voice. Now, it wasn't audible. Don't think I'm crazy here. This wasn't an audible voice I heard, but it was an inner voice that came over me and said, wait, stop. You got out there by yourself, turn around and go back the same way. Simple. I did that. And then I went for weeks trying to figure out what was different. What was different about this time than every other time in my life? Okay. And Anita said, I'd like to go to church. Now, this was weeks later. I'd like to go to church. I said, yeah, I'm in, because maybe that'll give me my answer. Well, it did. And I went to the pastor after several weeks of having him preach to me every week, just me, nobody else in the church. He was just, every word was coming at me. And I said, Jim, or Reverend Burke then, you know, I was saved when I was a kid. I was like 11 years old. I accepted Christ and I was baptized and everything. And anyway, I went into a lot more detail than what I'll tell you guys. But he looked up at me and he said, okay, well, I got one question for you, just one. If you died tonight, would you go to heaven? Ooh. Well, that was an unfair question, in my opinion, because I asked a question and he answered me with a question, but actually his question answered my question. And I accepted Jesus Christ in his office that night, and everything changed. There's more to the story, but I'll say that later. So anyway, I know exactly what you're talking about there, David. And I want to get back into these verses again and let you pick up. So here we go.
Yeah, 100%. So if you're looking at this, what is the picture that's actually given here is God used light to create the heavens and the earth, so the time-space continuum and this matrix that we live in, for those who like the movie The Matrix. This is it, and there's definitive proof. If you study quantum dynamics and Planck time, you'll understand that there is a limit to everything. There is a finite distance that you could travel. There's a finite smallness that's there, a finite amount of time, and the entire universe is digital and finite.
Right.
So therefore it must have been created, and it must be created from someone who exists outside of that time space dimension.
Right.
So right here, this tells me so many things. Number one, you're never going to understand him because we live within this time space dimension.
Right.
And if it, like Mr. and Mrs. Flat, Chuck Missler always used that, it was great. So if they only live on two dimensions, they'll never understand that third dimension. They just live on a piece of paper.
Right.
So you could stick your finger through there, you could be close to them. Well, God's up there in at least 10 dimensions. So he's outside of this whole time-space continuum. So he can see the end from the beginning. And he even said that, I was slain from the foundation of the world.
Right.
I know the end from the beginning. I know all this stuff because he's outside looking in on it. And that's a perspective you need to have. If there's anything you can't understand, it's because you're inside this continuum. You got to know that God is outside of that and he can see. That's why he can count every hair on your head.
Right.
So every person, everyone all through history, he can count the hairs on their head because he's literally got eternity to spend with each and every one of us individually.
Right.
Because eternity.
That is mind-blowing. And
yeah.
Now I'm jumping way, way, way ahead here. Okay. To the crucifixion.
And,
you know, the one thing that I always wondered was, I understand he had to suffer. I understand he had to be placed on the cross. That was all prophesied, everything, you know, but, why did he have to spend, I don't know what, I don't even know the exact amount of time, but why did he have to spend all, he's nailed to the cross, he's put up, why didn't he just die right away and, you know, it's done? And one thing that has always intrigued me is this thought, and it's just a thought, it's just my opinion, or not even an opinion, it's just a thought that came across. Is it just possible that it took whatever length of time that was for him to save everybody that was going to be saved? To actually see them in his mind or in whatever.
You mean 6 days of creation?
Like me, for instance, he saw me while he was on the cross.
Yes.
He saw you while he was on the cross. And it took that amount of time before he was able to die. I mean, that's, you know, I'm just, like I said, that's just something that I thought of one time. And, you know, it's always been there. Sorry for the dogs barking.
Oh, that's interesting. never really thought about that. I do know that because of the 6 days of creation and then the one rest day is a microcosm of the history of the world. Mm-hmm. And one day is as 1,000 years, 1,000 years is as one day.
Right.
So what you're going to see is 6,000 years of earth history, and then the rest day will be the 1,000 years that Jesus rules and reigns on the earth. We'll restore it to pre-flood-like conditions. It's going to be great. Yeah. So in the word in the beginning, like I said, is while beginning is a better translation. The word is reshit. In the...
I got it back up.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, for you people that are not seeing this, like if you're not watching it on YouTube or Facebook or some other social media site, you can go to www.lastchristian.net. That's www.lastchristian.net, and you can see it there. Also, if you happen to be watching us on YouTube, please do take a moment, subscribe to the channel, hit the little bell where you get notified of the new videos that come out. If you got a comment, please leave it, and we will definitely get back with you. I'm sorry for the interruption there, David. Go ahead with your explanation.
No, okay, no problem. So the word is actually reshit, which means beginning. But there's a bet in front of it, which is basically our letter B. It's a bet in the Hebrew. And the bet in front of a word means in, while, during, on top of, at the beginning, at the summit, the peak, those type of thoughts, because everything is a thought in the Hebrew. So when we translated it to English, they say, oh, in the beginning, that makes more sense to the English mindset. But in the Western mindset, it's more of while beginning, at the peak of beginning, at the summit of beginning. So for us, it'd be while he was beginning to do all this, he used light to create the heavens and the earth.
Ah, I see. Okay. Okay.
That's really what this whole verse means. He used light to create this matrix of heavens and earth. And in the when it first started here, when he did that, it was dark and void, but the Spirit of God was there. So that's when he started to move everything over. So Bet Reshit has really cool terms in it. So my question to you is, do you want to start with the seven words that are in the beginning, or do you want to start with the first word?
Whatever you want to do. I'm following you on this one.
Okay. So we just spoke about, you know, God's outside of the time space continuum. So, and he said, behold the lamb slain from the foundation of the world. So, but was he slain at the foundation of the world, or was he 4,000 years afterwards? Okay, and in what we call BC, when he was born and came to earth. So, well, let's take a look at that.
Okay.
It was prophesied. If we take the word Bereshit, in the beginning or while beginning, we can see that it's a Bet, a Resh, an Aleph, a Shin, a Yod, and a Tav. Okay?
Okay.
Those are our Hebrew letters, and each of them in the original Hebrew was a pictograph. A bet was a house. That's why you say bet. Where was he born? Lahem. Bethlehem. Yeah. Bethlehem.
Okay.
Bethlehem means house of bread.
Okay.
The word bet is a house. Okay. And it also symbolizes the sun. But then there's the letter Resh. Resh is the shape of a head. So it would give you the head of something. So the head, if you look at an R now, it looks like a head, right? The big R and then little arms coming out.
Right.
But in the original Hebrew, it was literally a head. So you have the head of the house. Now, the head of the house was always the firstborn son who inherited everything.
Right.
So you have Bet Resh. That's where we get bar mitzvah. The son is bar. Simon bar Jonah. Bar Abbas was the son of the father. And so anything with a bar or some, it depends on your usage. Sometimes it's ben, sometimes it's bar. So bet resh is bar. It means son. Now aleph is the first letter. That's where we get our A from. And it looks like an ox head. That's why our A kind of, if you turn it upside down, it looks like an ox head. Okay. But that represents the strength of the house, and that would be the father. So now we have the firstborn son of the father, right? Now here's the very first word, Bet Resh Aleph Shin Yod Tav, Bereshit. You have the sun.
You're pronouncing that than me. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. it's not bearish. Yeah, anyway, so we have the sun of the Father, and Sheen was a picture of two front teeth in the beginning. Okay. And it would be destroyed, to cut, to separate, those kind of ideas. It would be like this. So if you wanted to eat something, you would do this. Or if you want to destroy something, you would bite at it. So it gave that picture. So here we have the Beit Resh, the son of the Almighty Father, was destroyed, Sheen, and the Yod was a picture of your right hand. Okay. So now it's symbolic of, this is my work. Now, here's a hint. The Yod is, here's my work. Like Yod Hey Vav Hey. We see that. Behold the nail, behold the hand. And we see that it was destroyed by the work of his own hands. And I'll give you one clue at what the letter Tav it looks like. Wait, think of the sound. It sounds like T. What letter do we have that might sound like T?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I give
a
up.
A T.
T. Okay. Well, I was going to say T, but that's too easy.
That's why it's easy. What does a T look like? It looks like a cross.
I said, well, I'm not going to make an idiot of myself and say that. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Nah, that's fine. You can be an idiot.
Fine. Thank you for that.
I've done that many, many times, and I'll do it many times.
Me too. Me too.
All right. So the Tav in the ancient pictograph was a cross. It was basically like this. Like okay. A T. Okay. So it literally says in the very first word of the Bible, in the pictograph sentence, it says the begotten Son of the Almighty Father was destroyed by the work of his own hands on a cross.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
So he is the Lamb that was slain from the foundation of the world, because that's precisely what he's talking about right here.
Wow.
You don't see that in English, do you?
No, you don't. And also, just by the way, believe it or not, David, we've come to the end of the first half of this show. We've made it through three verses of Genesis. Okay.
Oh, we're not done yet.
So I'm telling you people that you're going to hear more here on this show, The Last Christian. Make sure you join us every time you can, no matter what station you're listening to. And you're going to hear stuff that you've never heard before, but it's all biblical. It's all for real. Hang in there with us. We will be back right after a very short break with the second half of The Last Christian. Be right back.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Stuart Smith. The Ugandan army says it's shot dead a number of Allied Democratic Forces rebels that killed two tourists and their driver in October. The military says the rebels were intercepted as they sailed on Lake Edward, which lies between the DRC and Uganda in the west of the country. Isabel Nakia reports from Kampala.
The Ugandan military says an overnight operation has left a significant number of the ADF fighters dead. The fighters were killed in a gunfire exchange on Lake Edward, where many are believed to have drowned. The commander of the militant group was also captured during the operation and is in the custody of the Ugandan army. Uganda says the rebels were linked to the recent attack on tourists in the Queen Elizabeth National Park. The couple that were on their honeymoon included a UK national and a South African citizen. Their driver was also killed in the attack. The group that's linked to the Islamic State reportedly carried out ambushes in western Uganda prior to the attack on the tourists.
Pakistan has begun deporting thousands of undocumented migrants, mostly Afghans, after the deadline for voluntary deportation came to an end earlier this week. More than 7,300 refugees, including over 100 prisoners, have already been deported through the Torkham border crossing with Afghanistan. The Taliban has condemned the decision and called it inhumane. Priyata Brajabasi reports.
As Pakistan begins the forceful deportation of thousands of Afghans, many of them who have called Pakistan home for decades say they have nothing to go back to. Others say they're terrified to be heading back to a Taliban-ruled Afghanistan. Over the past month, Pakistan has expelled more than 100,000 Afghan migrants. Taliban said the Pakistani government must halt the expulsion of immigrants, adding Afghans should not be penalized for bilateral tensions between Islamabad and Kabul. Pakistan claims it is acting to protect national security following a sharp rise in terror attacks after Taliban's takeover. Priyata Brajwasi in New Delhi.
At least one person has been killed in France as Storm Kieran hits North and Western Europe. A truck driver was struck in his vehicle by a falling tree, and several other people were injured as wind speed records were broken. Ross Cullen reports from Paris.
More than a million homes were left without power on Thursday as a result of the MEDA storm system that slammed into northern France. More than 1,000 people have had to leave their homes due to damage from Storm Kieran. Wind speeds in excess of 200 kilometres an hour, that's 128 miles an hour, were recorded, and waves over 20 metres high hit the coast in Brittany. There's been a major impact on travel, with road traffic stopped, airports closed and trains severely disrupted in the north of the country, but even the French capital, while inland, is being battered by very strong winds.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
And welcome back to the second half of The Last Christian. Again, my name is J.D. Williams, and located in New York, Mr. David Paxton. David, you amazed me in the first half of the show because there was so much that I had never heard before. I mean, I've read the Bible, I don't know how many times, but I've never heard a lot of the stuff that you put in there, but all of it makes perfect sense. So, like I told you during the break, I'm going to go back and listen to this again after we're done and do some research on it myself. But man, that was awesome. I really enjoyed listening to you.
So it's literally only the beginning.
Yeah, it really is. This is the very first show of our verse by verse, and we have started at Genesis 1. And again, we've only really gone to as far as like Genesis 3. And I've got the scripture back up on screen for you, David. I don't know where you want to take off, but basically,
well, the only reason we're at verse 3 is because the first three sentences are actually one sentence in the Hebrew.
Okay.
So,
well, I'm turning you loose.
Even be there yet.
I am turning you loose, sir. This show is basically yours at this point. So I'm just going to listen.
Okay.
And if I got a question, I'll come in with it. But other than that, I'm going to let you go.
All right. So let's just we know that God used light to create our time space continuum, and He lives outside of that. So He created this nice place for us to exist. I love this place, and He's very creative in it, and it's amazing. We love, my wife and I love to watch nature shows and just amaze at all the different animals, thousands of different things, and they all have to work. They all got to be creative. So let's get back to this. So we know that Bereshit is, that the Son of God was destroyed by the work of His own hands on the cross. We see that in there, but let's look at that, what we typically view as a first sentence. In the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. So while beginning to create the heavens and the earth, in the Hebrew that's actually seven words. Okay, now what's the significance of that?
Well sevens are everywhere. Seven symbolizes perfection, right?
Correct, perfection. And not necessarily good, because we see the seven heads on the dragon in it, but it's a perfect picture of the dragon. So that's kind of the point. But there's also the seven spirits of God that are around there too. So it symbolizes a Shavuot, which is sevens in the Hebrew. And everything is a seven base, including, the days of creation. But there's seven words here as well. And a couple of them you don't see in the English. And we don't see that all the time. Now, let's get back to Revelation for a second. Joel, what does Jesus call himself? I'm the beginning and the end. What are the letters he used?
Oh, you would ask me something like that, wouldn't you? I know the answer, and I can't remember the answer.
Yeah, I know you know the answer. When I say it, you're going to be like, duh. Uh-huh. The Alpha and Omega, right?
Alpha and Omega, yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Brain fart.
I knew that. You caught me off guard.
I know you did. Okay, well, they were all Jewish back then, so to them it would have been the Aleph and Tav. Tav is the last letter.
Okay.
Aleph is the first letter. The Aleph Tav. In the Hebrew, it comes out as Et. And if you look at my logo, it's Aleph Tav. Okay? That is the pictograph. It's got the Aleph, which is the ox head, and then the Tav, which is the cross-looking T there. And that's what they look like in the ancient Hebrew, the Aleph Tav. It's not really translated into the English. So you really got to look at the Hebrew for this. And because it's the Aleph Tav, I believe just about every single spot you see it, the Aleph Tav, that word et in the Old Testament, it is a reference to the Messiah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, now, okay. Real quick, before you go on, and before I forget, I do want everybody to look very carefully there. If you're looking at this in visual form anyway, and if you're not, then you need to pay attention to what I'm going to say. You need to go to www.thehiddenday.com. So all together, The Hidden Day. So it's www.thehiddenday.com. That's David's site and the organization there, The Hidden Day. David, tell us about that, if it doesn't wipe out what you wanted to talk about anyway. I don't want to blow.
Well, the hidden day is exactly this. It's a hidden day when Jesus will return. We have a time frame, and no one knows the exact day or hour, but we're looking completely, and that's what Yom Teruah is, or Rosh Hashanah. Yom Teruah means a day of blowing the trumpets, and Rosh Hashanah, like we just said, Resh here, Bet Resh. Rosh Hashanah means is the head of the year. So it's a new year for the modern Jews. So when we see the Aleph Tav, it's reference to Jesus, because he said, I am the Alpha and the Omega. So he said, I am the Aleph Tav. So I'm going to look at the Hebrew, and it literally says, Bereshit bara Elohim et. Okay. Bereshit is in while beginning, and then bara is created, Elohim, God, et. So Bereshit bara Elohim et. And then it says Hashamayim, which is heaven, and then Ba'et, so it's Aleph Tav again, but with a Vav in front of it, which means and. So they translated and then Haretz, which is earth. So Bereshit bara Elohim et Hashamayim Ba'et Haretz, which is in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth, which we have in the English. Those are seven words in the Hebrew.
Well, you know, one of these days, I'm going to have to learn this stuff.
Yeah.
I have never studied Hebrew nor Greek ever. And every
You got to do it.
Every good pastor I've ever been around, or any good Bible teacher I've ever been around, they seem to know this stuff. You know, so I got to do it one of these days.
Well, it's easy to look up definitions of the words. That's not hard, because you could just do that with any Bible software program or even on an app nowadays. What the difficult part nowadays is actually digging into the ancient meanings and the pictographs and what the words meant when they were written and to whom they were written.
Right.
That's when the Bible really comes alive.
Yeah.
So, again, we have seven words, and they're akin to 7 days of creation. They're akin to 7,000 years of earth history, 6,000 years, and then the millennial reign of another 1,000 years. So check this out. Bereshit bara Elohim et. The fourth word, okay, is Aleph Tav.
And you're talking of Genesis 1.
Yeah, we're only in 1:1. Yeah.
Okay. Just making sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, the fourth word in the Hebrew is the Aleph Tav, which is Jesus. Jesus will come on the fourth day. Okay?
Okay.
And then it says, Hashamayim, which is heaven. He comes from heaven on the fourth day. And then on the sixth day, it's Vav Et. Now, when you put a vav in front of a word, it's basically it's a conjunction, and it's and. But vav also has a picture of the sixth letter, so it's a number six, and it's a man. So now we have Jesus coming from heaven on the fourth day, and then he comes back as a man on the sixth day to rule and reign on the earth.
Okay, now here you're talking, I want to get a clarification here. Here you are talking about the fourth day of creation, correct?
Well, the fourth day of the 1,000 years is as one day.
Okay, okay.
Yep. And that's when he came. When he came the first time, it was 4,000 years. Abraham was 2,000 from Anamundo, the day of creation. And then on the sixth day, is after the 6,000 years, he'll return.
Okay.
So where
does that put us now?
We're at 6,000 years now.
Yeah.
We're like right smack up
right
at the end.
We are there. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
the
why
reason that we keep saying, yeah, that's the reason that we keep saying time is not your friend if you haven't accepted Jesus yet, right?
Yeah. So the best estimates are somewhere around 4004 BC was on our calendar, if you would use our calendar. Uh-huh. The 4004 BC was Adam and Eve were created. So we're right smack at the end of that because Jesus showed up at the age of grace. If you do it like an Essene calendar study, you can see they prophesied the exact day that he would be crucified. And then, so the fourth word, which is the fourth day, which is the 4,000 years, and then the sixth day, which is the sixth word, which is 6,000 years, you see the Aleph Tav come again in the Hebrew. So if you're looking at pictograph types and patterns, here is the lamb slain from the foundation of the world and the Aleph Tav coming from heaven. So he left his estate in heaven on the fourth day, and then he'll come to rule and reign on the earth on the sixth day, because it says et hashamayim va'et edits.
Okay, two questions. I got two questions for you. Okay.
Yeah.
Number one, I know that, you know, the Hebrew is something that Jews understand, right? So, why don't they see this? I mean, you know, they denied Jesus.
They're blinded.
Until
the fullness of the Gentile.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I should have known that because it's clear in the Bible. That's what the Bible says happens. Okay.
But, yeah. So they can parse all this out, but they'll just skip right over Isaiah 53, though.
Right. Yeah. And you know, we've debated that on the show many, many times. You know that they don't see synagogues don't preach that or don't teach that or whatever.
Yeah, they don't.
Okay. And I forgot what.
They will one day. They'll say. Okay. Where'd you get the wounds in your hands?
The other point I was going to say, not really a question. I just wanted to make sure that everybody out there understands. David's not calling a shot. I'm not calling a shot. We're not saying that we know the day and time of the rapture, because it's very clear in the Bible that no one knows. Not even, you know, Jesus said when he was here, he didn't even know. Of course, now he chose not to know. And we can
He came as a man. He gave up his position in heaven to come and be a man.
Right.
So he can,
he
fulfill the contract.
Only God knows the day and the hour of the rapture. So we're not calling a shot. I just wanted to make that clear. I'm just making that clear for everybody. That's all. Okay.
Yeah. He did say no one knows the day or the hour, but he didn't say he didn't know what week, month, or year.
That's true too. And I don't know if we'll ever go there or not, but we might. Who knows? Okay. Go ahead.
We're getting close.
Okay.
But remember, Satan comes and he seeks to mess up the times and the seasons.
Right.
And this is why, because he doesn't want people to know exactly when, because then they would repent. But that's what the Antichrist does. So the Antichrist spirit does that, and he messed up the calendar. That's why we have a Gregorian calendar now that has changed, you know, many times over the years for all sorts of different reasons. But we are real close. You can't just forget about all the years, but he can mess up times.
Sure.
You know, and say, okay, well, this is this week. No, it's next week. Oh, it's over here. No, it's a month over there. It's a couple years off. But for major stuff, we're at 6,000 years.
I am convinced by world events that are going on, and we get into this in other editions of The Last Christian, but I am utterly convinced that these are the last days. and that we are the last generation, and that we will see all of prophecy come true during our generation's life. I can't say during my life or during your life, because we don't know God's plan for either one of us to even be here. But I am certain, in my opinion, that we are the last generation. Do you agree with that, David?
Yeah, I mean, the time clock starts clicking with Israel.
Right. That has been my point all along. And I've got people, even in my own family, that disagree with me and say they don't think it's going to be us. They think it's going to be our kids or our grandkids or something, you know. And I don't see that. Well, I just don't see it.
When is Israel actually lasted, you know, more than 80 years or so?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, God gave it to them, way back in Genesis.
Yeah, and how long were they not in the land? They messed it up pretty much each and every time.
All right, well, I'm taking away from you. I'm going to go ahead and put the scripture back up there and let you continue on. Go ahead.
Well, you know what? I should have made the Hebrew. I'll get the Hebrew up for next time so we can revisit it again.
Okay.
But if you look at this, you'll really see a lot in the Hebrew. So you'll see the Aleph Tav come on day four, which is Jesus. He comes down on day four. And then you see the Vav Aleph Tav, where now he's a man and he's coming back to rule on the earth on day seven, but he comes at the end of day six. So it came at the end of day four from heaven, you saw, because in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth, and the Aleph Tav was in front of them. So I want to be real clear on that. It is picture perfect in the ancient Hebrew. So a kid could read this, know what the pictures say, and say, oh, okay, yeah, the Son of God is going to come and be destroyed, and he's going to be on a cross, and then he's going to come back on day four, and then again on day six, and, oh, that's going to be fun, because it's pictures. It's like you're talking in emojis today,
I'm jumping way ahead, and I don't know if you like this or not, but I've jumped all the way to Genesis 1:14-19, because you keep mentioning the fourth day, so I figured, okay, well, I'll put up the scripture for the fourth day. So it's Genesis.
Yeah, what comes on? The great lights in the firmament come on day four to rule over the day and the night.
Right.
Okay. So it just all fits together. And it's perfect. And you know what's cool is they're corresponding too. So like day one, corresponds with day four. So he made the heavens, right? So what did he do on day four? So you got three and then three. So that's pretty cool.
Right.
Day one, heavens. And then 3 days later, day four, he filled the heavens. Day two, he made the water in the sky. And day five, he made the fish and the birds to fill the water in the sky.
Right, right.
And on day three, we will,
I promise you guys, we will get into each one of these, because we're going to go verse by verse. If I could click them fast enough, David, I'd be putting those up there. I'm just too slow finding the exact slide.
Yeah, it's really cool, because he made the sky. He made the heavens, the water in the sky, the land. And then he turned right around, came back, and says, I'm going to fill the heavens, going to fill the water in the sky, I'm going to fill the land. So day one, two, three, and then day four, five, and six. So you see the pattern there, the typical Hebrew pattern of repetition and form. And not necessarily rhyme like we have in English, because he knew over the years it's going to be translated. It's not going to rhyme anymore, but it's pattern and thoughts and repeating the same themes. So that's pretty cool. We're going to get into that too. We'll see that. But Hashamayim. So Shamayim, if you see an H in front of a word in the Hebrew, it's the, like Rosh Hashanah.
Okay.
The head of the year, basically. So head, Rosh, the year, Ha Shana. Okay. When we see Yeshua Ha Mashiach, Jesus the Christ.
Right.
So there's a word, Shamayim is heaven. So in the Hebrew, if you want to say the heavens, you would say Ha Shamayim. And basically, you would just put an H in front of it, or a hey.
Okay.
So it would be Hashamim, and it would just be one word, but it means the heavens. But if you look, heavens are plural, because anything with the im at the end, a yod mem, or I am in the English, Shamayim, you know, goyim, anything like that is plural, which means there's two or more.
Okay, Jerusalem. Well, let me interrupt you again. You said I could ask questions, so I'm going to ask questions.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So a lot of people out there, and I know even I was one of them for a long time, look at it and say, okay, heaven, and that's it. There's one heaven. That's it for good. Okay. That's where it started. That's where it ends. But there's more than one heaven. And that's something that
people don't. Yeah, it's defined. Yeah.
Yeah. So can you explain that a little bit to somebody who's no clue? They have no idea. Go ahead.
Okay. So this is how it starts. Shamayim. And this is where we get our first clue that it's separated, because we'll see the word firmament. And a lot of people like to use that today. Oh, there's a firmament up there. Well, it's not there anymore. The flood kind of wiped it out. But anyway, there was a firmament. And that's when it says Shamayim. Shin, remember, is to cut or to separate. Shin, mem.
Genesis 1, 6 through 8 up there to where you can see that firmament.
Yep, that's firmament. And divide the waters from the waters. Look at that in verse 6. God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters. Let it divide the waters from the waters. Okay. So you'll see water above and water below. And that space out there is called heaven. But in the Hebrew, that word is Shamayim. Shin is separate. Mem is a symbol of water because it has, you know, it looks like an M. And M, it was because of waves. That's why an M looks like an M, because it symbolized water and waves.
Ah, okay. Okay.
Gotcha. Okay, that's where we get that from. That's why the Mem is water or chaos. Because you're on a big open water, it could be a lot of chaos. And we see that even right from the beginning. The darkness was void, you know, and it was without form. And it was the water was chaos. So you can see that's why it says in the new heaven, new earth, there'll be no sea. There'll be no more sea. Well, right. What does he mean there'll be no more sea? Well, there'll be no more chaos. Mm-hmm. Because it represents the water or the oceans and the nations and all the chaos that's involved with that. So you start to see all these different word pictures. So it says Shin Mem Yod Mem. So it means he separated Mem from Mem. Mm-hmm. So he separated water from water. And then he defines it as in verse 6, hey, let there be water above and water below. And there's going to be this thing called the firmament, or rakia, is going to be the thing that separates it. But it's the heaven, literally means separate water from water.
Well, you know, looking at this, and I, you know, like I said, I've read the Bible several times, but I missed verse 7. I went through it and mm-hmm. just really.
Yeah, and today people say, oh, it's the clouds and this and that.
Yeah,
but there was literally...
Because I never heard this water above and below thing until right now, you know. Okay, go ahead.
You probably like that little bathtub-shaped Noah's Ark, too. Yeah.
I just thought I'd throw that in because, you know, people need to understand that, you know, anytime you read the Bible, and David will back me up on this 100% without a second thought, anytime you read the Bible, you're going to find something new in it. Every single time, 100%. I guarantee it. Now, I can read any other book on the planet, and I may be able to even memorize the thing, you know, and know what everything means. But when it comes to the Bible, there's a lot that I know, there's a lot that I don't know, and there's a lot that I'm still trying to figure out. You know, that's about the best I can tell you.
Go ahead, David, I still tease God. We got a thing going. I always ask him, when did you put that in there?
Yeah, exactly.
Because it wasn't there last time.
Yeah. And I'll also be, I'm going to be totally honest with the audience now, because they'll forget it by the time we get there. But there is one book of the Bible, you know, like Numbers. Okay. I'm afraid to read it. Every time it's like, It's just mind blowing. You know, I don't get it. I don't get it. So I'm looking forward to getting there. Like I said, people will forget I mentioned that by the time we do.
Well, that's actually an extremely important book.
And I don't read it, you know, because it's
prophetically wise.
Yeah.
Well, you're not going to get it in English, though.
That's, no. Well, and I'm looking forward, like I said, I'm really looking forward to this because, you know, you're bringing a lot of new information out there, things that I have never heard before from anyone, from any pastor or any church, any sermon ever. And yet,
precisely why I looked it up.
And why you.
Because I'm like, what aren't you telling me?
When you look at it, it makes absolute 100% perfect sense. Now, here's another warning for those of you who aren't Christians yet. If you have not accepted Jesus, a lot of it you will never understand until you do. Okay, so, you know, I'm not saying start your biblical journey in Genesis 1. Maybe that's not where you need to start. There are a lot of people that start in Matthew 1, and that's fine. Read the red letters, okay? I mean, that's fine. If that's what you need to do, then you can go back.
You know where Paul started?
Well, it had to be in the Old Testament because he couldn't have possibly known about the New Testament. He was living it and writing it.
I'll tell you exactly where he started, by teaching them prophecy. The first thing he taught them that Jesus was coming back in the rapture to get them. Here's why. They went through the whole Old Testament and explained it. He says, this was a mystery before, but let me go through this. Bing, 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 bing. Mm-hmm. He's coming back just the way he went up.
Right.
You better get ready.
You better
get ready. It was the first thing he taught all Christians.
Okay. Well, now you queued me up, and it's a good thing because we're just about out of time. But we're looking for that last Christian. And by that, I mean the last person to accept Jesus Christ as their personal Savior before the rapture of the church. Because just like there is a last play in every football game, quarterback drops back, throws the pass, win or lose right now, then the game's over. Well, when Christ comes halfway down, that's what I call it, comes halfway down and yanks every Christian living and dead off of this earth in the moment that they call the rapture, then time is up for everybody that hasn't beforehand, and they have to at least encounter a part of the 7 years of great tribulation to follow. That's God's wrath for 7 years. Things have never been that bad, and things will never be that bad again after it's over. And you can avoid all of that by simply going to God and saying, Lord, I know I'm a sinner. I ask for your forgiveness. I know Jesus Christ died on the cross for me. I know he laid in a tomb for 3 days, and he rose on the third day just like he said he would. I know he was seen by more than 500 people at the same time. I know he's promised to come back and get us before God unleashes that wrath. I know he's sitting at the right hand of God waiting on that go order. Okay? So all you got to do is pray that prayer in your own words, and please do end it with some very important words, and that is, in Jesus' name. And if you are that last Christian, the next face that you see, it's not going to be mine, it's not going to be David's, it's going to be Jesus Christ himself, because he's coming back personally to get every single one of us. And you want to be on that ride? There's only one bus. Don't miss it. Now, we're going to have this particular series, our midweek, every week from now on until the rapture happens or one of us dies off or whatever, okay? But we're going to do this every week. And we ask that you join us. We made it all the way through 3 verses today. And David, you kind of predicted that. But anyway, we'll be back.
We actually made it through the first one.
See you next time. Until then, good night. God bless.
Thanks again for joining us today for the Last Christian Radio Show. And be sure to tune in every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday right here and at www.lastchristian.net. Until the trumpet sounds.
I'm a pretty great multitasker. I can wash dishes and do laundry.
I can roller skate while walking my dog.
I can even order lunch while doing my homework. But I can't use my phone while driving. A distracted driver is one of the leading causes of death in the United States. So when it comes to driving, please, don't be a multitasker.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.